This is Film Center, your number one show for real entertainment industry news. No fluff, all facts. Now, here are your anchors, Derek Johnson II and Nicholas Killian.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Film Center News. I'm Derek Johnson II.
I'm Nicholas Killian.
And we're back again with the great Gilbert. How you doing?
I'm doing great.
So this is going to be part two?
Yeah.
Part two.
If you would please be so gracious as to continue your story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So my dad sees the show and he didn't see me. Like, after the first 5 seconds, he was just like, he was totally involved. And my father's not an emotionally expressive person,
mm-hmm.
but it was telling me that he left
right.
because of how it ends. I understood why he left. But then he came back, and then he shared with me, like, oh.
He was around for Martin Luther King.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was.
Is
yeah,
that
he,
why
but he
left?
Wasn't, he left, he, yes. And this is some things that my father hasn't. He lets things slip out every once in a while, so he was a lot more active in certain things that I'm till this day I'm still not completely aware of. I'm talking about social movements and things like that. But he
might have known Martin.
No, he did that. He didn't because
okay.
he didn't get to the States until a few years after Martin was already gone.
Had already passed. Yeah.
But I think just how the piece ends. And the state of the world, because we were doing the show, and there was someone else in office. I'll say that. It was in 2018. So that gives you an idea of what was happening in the country at the time.
Yeah.
And so with him saying that to me, it was just like, okay, cool. I think that was the biggest compliment. He gets it now, and it was the biggest compliment he could pay me, even though he didn't give me a compliment. He didn't verbally, directly give
say,
me
like,
a
great job. But it's,
right.
at the same time, it's,
but
like,
he
it's
left.
A huge,
he had to, he
it's
had,
a huge,
yes,
deep
because he had to get back. He had to, I'm doing right. air quotes, you can't see it, but he right. had to get back to Georgia, which
right.
I understood, but I was just like, no.
That's still a super deep compliment. Like, for him to be like,
that's,
you know,
better than anything he could say.
Right,
oh, absolutely.
Like, you're up there doing your craft, and he says, essentially, you're doing it to a level to where you're my own son, and yet you transcended that, and I see the craft of what you're doing. That's a huge compliment for an actor, especially from your parents. I imagine that's my dad, too.
Yeah.
So I imagine my dad saying something like that. It's like crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, even now, I was like, wow, yeah. At that point, I think he got it, and then he stopped asking those questions again.
Uh-huh.
Like, are you going back? Are you going to do that? I'm like, no, I'm not gonna. Not right now. Everything I'm.
So you were at what age whenever he stopped being like, you're gonna be a lawyer?
Well, you said 2018.
It was 2018.
Oh
no. What I will say is that he stopped. It was maybe a few years before that, because he started seeing the movement that was happening, and I didn't talk about it a whole lot. He would just see things, and then it became, why aren't you telling me that you're?
Why don't you come to Los Angeles? Because you spent a lot of, like, I'd say, well, most of your time in New York, if I'm incorrect.
Yes and no. I got out of school in 99,
uh-huh.
and I came to L.A. right after that.
Oh, okay.
Was there a reason that you came to L.A. instead of staying in New York?
Because New York is grounds for a lot of stuff.
I love theater. I had done a lot of theater in New York. I'd done some independent films in New York while in school, and it was great. And I love New York. You'll never hear me say I don't.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that happened was a professor of mine from NYU, we were doing a theater history class, but she also taught, I'm trying to remember, because she also taught dialects and things like that. But it was a professor, Professor Bynum was her name. And she said to me, we were having a conversation in class, and she said, you have to push yourself, you have to challenge yourself, and he said, set yourself up to win. Where do you need to be to do what you want to do? And that can be literally or figuratively. And then I started thinking, I said, what do I want to do? I want to do film and television. And while there's a lot of film and television in New York, there's more in L.A.
Yeah, it's definitely more in L.A. I remember whenever I was deciding to be an actor,
mm-hmm.
and I was in New Orleans, right? This was around 2011.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 12, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going around. It was getting a little bit bigger because it's New Orleans, stuff like that. And I remember meeting with some agents. And I remember one guy, I don't remember his name, but he was like, listen, man, I'm going to be real honest with you. He said, you need, if this is where you're headed, you need to go to Los Angeles. He said, now, don't get me wrong. You could day play. You can do whatever you want in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. He said, but there is no reputable institution that is going to cast anybody in here in New Orleans or Baton Rouge or anything like that. He said, if anything, you're going to go to Los Angeles, get cast as a local hire in New Orleans, and then fly back. He said, but you got to go. You got to go to Los Angeles.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. But wasn't there supposed to already be some Hollywood Mecca like a while back in Louisiana?
Yes, but what ended up happening was is the mayor at the time, I forget her name or her name, was vetoed the taxes. That's how everything went to Georgia.
Yeah.
Because we...
So that's how Atlanta got big, yeah.
That's
yeah.
how Atlanta got big, because it correct. This is 10, 12 years ago.
Right.
But what if I remember correctly, was it was supposed to be New Orleans, because they call it the Hollywood South. And what ended up happening is one of the mayors vetoed the taxes and tax breaks.
Yeah.
And they moved to Georgia and Atlanta.
Georgia's tax breaks for film productions are a lot higher than Louisiana, a lot higher than our places in the South.
I think it might have been better a couple of years ago, especially like after the previous direction.
Yeah, he's talking about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Because the thing was, is people loved coming to the South, especially Louisiana, because the food is really great, everything is really cheap, and nobody cares who you are. Right. Like, nobody in Baton Rouge or New Orleans cares. Like, nobody cares if Tom Cruise is in line. Nobody cares what Brad Pitt is doing. Nobody cares. They're like, okay, cool, man. Like, I gotta get my food. If you could just get out the way, that'd be great.
Like my dad and like my grandparents. Like when I first worked with Bill Duke. I worked with Bill Duke on one of his upcoming documentaries. I was like, I showed him a picture, and I was like, yeah, this is me on set. Da da da. They're like, that's cool. This is like a he's a movie star guy. I'm like, yes. And they're like, yep. So what else happened today? I'm like, seriously?
Yeah.
This is what's going on.
Yeah. Parents are amazing.
Yeah.
Houses, and you can color that in however you want. Yeah. But yeah, it's
so you came out then in 99.
Yeah.
So then this what you're talking about that took place in 2018 with your father. Was that out here then? Or was that in?
That was in Nashville.
Like, yeah.
I was doing a tour. I was actually doing a tour.
Right. You guys go to TPAC to do that or no?
Man, I'm not even gonna lie to you. I don't remember exactly because we did.
Let me ask you
60 shows.
If it was in like the city?
It was in the city. I do remember that it was. I think we were at a.
If there was any stadiums around or like any. Bars are good. The only reason I ask is because TPAC is part of the Broadway tour they do before they hit New York.
Maybe it was that.
Everywhere that I've seen like really great plays or like awesome plays have always been at TPAC. That's their like big place.
The performance.
So that's what I'm assuming it probably was if you did it in Nashville.
I'd have to look back and see, and I can confirm that for you, but it's possible because it felt like we were near the water. We were able to walk to the water, not to see the water.
Right.
And then there were a lot of bars, restaurants around.
It probably was T-Bag. Now that you're describing it, it probably was. Because I'll tell you what, especially if it was a 2018. Like, I'm from actually Murfreesboro, the outskirts of Nashville. But just that area, it's city, and then there's a hard line and just straight rural. It was TPAC, and that's where that is because is it's very funny. I always say that Nashville was made for the tourists and everyone else, like no one there actually does any of the rest of that stuff,
right? Exactly,
yeah.
It's like New York, it's, have you been to the Statue of Liberty? No,
yeah.
I haven't. I was like, I'll go someday. Have you? Right. But it's a tourist thing, so it's like
that's like back home. Not a lot of people go to Bourbon Street. It's
all the tourists.
It's all the tourists,
right?
But also, that's absolutely incredible, though, that the journey of almost 20 years to get that compliment from your dad.
Yeah.
To be fair, because I'm imagining Jamaican parents, right? Yeah. They're immigrants coming over to America for a different life.
Yeah,
and that type of hardworking background. My father, he's not Jamaican. He came from Sea Pleasant, Maryland. Mm-hmm. My grandmother working three jobs to raise him and his other siblings and stuff like that. People who come from that type of hardworking background, sometimes it's hard for them to really accept like creativity or understanding.
And here's a funny, my dad, and anyone who's asked me to talk about my dad, I'll say that I said, he's all of these things. And quite as it's kept, he's also an artist. And he was like, oh, really? I was like, no, really?
Really?
Even now, I remember a sketch that he did of us when we were like little kids in the first car he had here in the States.
Wow.
It was like a VW Beetle or something. Mm-hmm. And it was in this ledger book notebook that he would just had around. Mm-hmm. And I loved looking at it. And he's a master welder as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would literally, all of the ironwork that was around the house, chances are he did that. There was something that, and he would also...
Iron sculptures.
Like the railings, any mm-hmm. ornate things.
Iron at all, in general.
Any iron at all. Wow. And there was this one, and I know I got still have it somewhere. He made this like tree. It was like probably about, the base was probably about maybe 2.5-3 inches, but it was heavy. It was solid steel.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had melted metal or iron or whatever to form like a tree without leaves, just like a tree.
Wow.
And I loved that piece. I was like, he gave it to me. Mm-hmm. But it was just like, no, he's an artist. But again, coming from that background, you don't see a lot of people doing that, and you don't see it as a possibility of a way to build a career, to earn a living.
Right, because the risks are so high. There's
exactly.
nothing to fall back
it's
on.
Not, exactly. It's not safe, really. Yeah. It's not a safe path.
You have
path.
A family.
Yeah, exactly.
And
exactly.
Especially if you're coming over as an immigrant, you need the safe path to ensure stability.
There's no safety net.
And I think like I feel like my parents instilled that in me. And not just my parents, because it's like they also, I had a whole bunch of other people around me that mentors that I never see where they were teachers and specifically really, really just had a real impact, a heavy impact on my life was when I went when I made that journey to the Bronx. They were with us rolling around the Floridas. I'll just run down their names real quick, and you may not know them, but I just want to do it because out of respect. So it's like the first was Harry Poe, and he was the artistic director at the time, and then Akra Amenhotep, who he was the composer slash vocal coach slash everything. He became my godfather actually, and he passed away last year.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. And he had a major impact on my life. And there's also my theater godmother as well, Hilda Willis, who became the director because Harry, he passed away while I was still in high school, actually, if I remember correctly. And then Melveda Hughes, who was the choreographer. And then it was Byron Johns, who ran the department. They all, like, to this day... I have a connection to those who are still with us physically. I have a connection to and still a connection to the organization. They had such a huge impact. And my parents allowed the space for them to become
a part
foster
of your life.
Foster parents to a certain degree.
Right.
And I think they appreciated it. And I know that there were points where they questioned it because it's like you're giving your child.
Sounds like you just had an amazing formation of people.
It was a village.
Absolutely.
And then one of the things I would ask you is that you've already you had played Martin Luther King in the play.
Yeah.
How did that in your process as an actor lead you into playing Martin Luther King in the movie?
Because I'm sure it was very different.
Yeah, it was. And
do you feel like a special connection now that you
did? You feel like it prepared you at least.
That I was prepared to? No. What else? And I'll preface it with this. So there is, in Independence, Kansas, there's a theater festival that happens called the William Inge Theater Festival. Happens every year. Really wonderful. But I got invited down because there's a piece that I did, a musical show that I did that was Paula Vogel, amazing playwright. She has a new play on Broadway right now, which is great. But she's been in the game for a long time, but she's a really wonderful person. Anyway, It was called Civil War Christmas. And so she was being honored with an award at the Inch Festival. And so she created a list of artists that she wanted to come to be a part of that presentation. So I was one of the people on the list. And the person who was organizing the list contacted me about it. And was like, and also, I just have one question, shot in the dark. Would you be interested in reading a role, doing stage reading of a new piece that's going to Broadway that written by Katori Hall? And I was like, oh, what is that? I was like, it's called The Mountaintop. I was like, Mountaintop, you'd be playing Martin Luther King. I was like,
as a black man, that's an intense figure. To like, that's a weight of responsibility.
Yeah. And I was like, I was like, Peter, I don't know. I was like, let me read the script first and then I'll give you an answer. And so, and then I had already, like, at that point, I had done some historical roles. So I had, did a one-man musical about Malcolm X. That was a whole other thing.
Yeah.
That was an amazing experience for me. And I was like, okay. I read it, and I was just like, oh. Some things that he says, the things that in the piece itself, if you haven't seen it, is that Martin, the thing is funny, Martin never saw himself as anything other than a man. And that, and it's clear, even in Katori's writing of, and so it surprised a lot of people because he's been deified in such a way in society and in culture, and becomes almost mystical. And it's, and he never saw it that way. And people who were living during that time never saw it that
and
way.
And even being a preacher, he would have never have wanted him to be viewed in that way.
No, not at all. Not at all. And so the piece itself plants him on the ground, makes it tangible, because the idea is that if a man, he's a man, accomplish what he accomplished. And don't forget, he was 36 when he was assassinated. People don't think about that. It's like they thought he was like.
What's quite interesting is that for some reason, and this is, my mom's a psychologist.
Oh, yeah.
So anytime I talk to her, she's always talking about something with the brains. I will say this. Mm-hmm. It was quite interesting having a mom as a psychologist. You can't trick her with anything.
No.
Even till this day, like if I start talking to her about something, she's like, oh, cool. So actually this other thing's going on. I'm like, how do you know that? I'm like, what is going on? The mother intuition and she's a psychologist? I lose every time. But anyway, something that she once told me was that basically when people have a really positive view of someone, they always age them significantly higher.
Right.
And it's just like something that people just do in general.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
And it's, I guess it's like, it means it's not to take, they live life. And the assumption is because they live the life that they live, they must have lived for a long time. And it's like, no, he was activated at an earlier age. He knew what he wanted to do and he saw the need and that's what's his trajectory.
Had a beeline for
it. Exactly. Right. We can go into things about the issues he might have had with his parents and things like that, but that's a whole, your mom could talk about that part.
Yeah.
But it's like, he would get, when you're clear and you know what it is, that what your purpose is and you go for it, whatever area, whatever career it is, as long as your desire is to be the best and to do the best and to affect the world in a positive way, do that. Like, my tool is I'm an artist, I'm an actor, I sing, I write, I, you know, do all the things. That is my tool. That is the blessing that I have that I can share with the world.
Right.
So that's what I do. But with him in particular, so going back to that, I read the script and I was just, this is a lot. I don't know. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a two-hander and it's a lot of stuff. And I was like, and there are things in there that I learned that I wasn't aware of also. Hmm. And so that made me do some research. So when I got there, I said, okay, I told him I'll do it. I said, I'll do it. But I have some questions for Katori just about just how the piece was received. And she was very honest and she was, a lot of people were offended because of some of that he's cursing, he smokes, he does drink, but those things are documented.
But you're making him more, you're grounding him.
Exactly.
Right? You're taking
the
deity part, right? And making him a person.
Exactly. And then And then when she said that, I said, got it, no problem. And then the director, Che Yu, is his name. We had a conversation about it, and he was just like, he's a man and just go from there. I was like,
yeah, he's got thoughts, feelings, desires.
Exactly. And so that was the first time. And I got, and we got, I was opposite Anika Noni Rose, which I don't understand why she didn't do the Broadway version, but that's.
He had some reason, I'm sure.
Exactly. And from there, after doing that, I said, okay, this is possible. And then fast forward a couple of years later, I get an opportunity to first do audition for it. And, but the director, I had worked with her before, and she was like, I know who I want for this, and this is who I want. She passed away last year, unfortunately, but she, Shirley Jo Finney's her name, and a brilliant creative mind and human being. She, but the producing entity was like, we don't know him, so let's bring everybody in. So they brought everybody in. And then she said this to me afterwards. She said, Gilbert, after you left the room, I was like, she did not sit down. And normally when there's an audition process, she sits down.
Yeah.
And she's connected. But she said, I didn't sit down because I didn't want them to look at me. She walked to the back and stayed in the back and let them watch. And then after I left, all she did was walk down and just looked at them. And they were like, absolutely. What we gotta, he said, but we still have other people. At that point, I think they knew.
Yeah.
So long story short, did the tour with Karen Molina White, who's brilliant and amazing human being and artist as well. And we toured internationally with it. We got as far as, where did we go? Bermuda. We went to Bermuda as
really?
Well. And we did, it was like, I think we did 50 shows over the course of 3 or 4 months.
That's some back-to-backs. You know, very interesting is that, it's funny that you say that, we still have to go look at the other people. Mm-hmm. I know exactly how that feels, especially when you're casting a project and stuff like that, and then you see the person that you want, you're just like, oh man, I gotta go see these other people, and I know they ain't gonna get it.
I know they're not gonna do it.
It's like it's a very weird feeling because you're like, especially because that person leaves, like you see the person that you're like, okay, there's them, I want them, awesome, this is who we're going with. Everyone's like, everyone's unanimously agree with it. Yeah. That person leaves. Then the next person comes in, they do what they gotta do, and then as soon as they leave, you look back at the casting directors and you're like, again, we're still thinking about that person from a while ago, right?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Can we go home? but you can't.
You can't do that.
Right.
No offense to these other actors, but we already found the one.
And then at the same time, what I always find very interesting, especially with the casting process, because a lot of, and we've said this, me and Nicholas have said this on the show before, a lot of young actors don't understand is that we want you guys to win.
This is not the doctor's office.
Yeah, right. I'm not really.
It's not the dentist's office.
Yeah, right. I have no idea where this sentiment came from that like actors are like, oh, they're gonna hate me because they're a caster.
Because insecurities, and I think unfortunately we're preconditioned to think the worst before the best out of situations and people.
Yeah,
and so to actually walk in with, I'm right. And it's not, we were talking about this off mic, just the having that self, that confidence in what you bring to the table.
Right.
And if it's not about arrogance, it's not about that at all. It's just that I know what I bring to the table and I'm going to bring that. And so if you do that and that works for this project or this particular situation, then it's yours. Yes, there are politics and things that play, and I could tell you other stories about situations that I was in where they eventually realized, oh, wait a minute, we made a mistake, but I'll tell you that off mic. But we're in a situation here as actors where we're going to hear a no a lot more times than we hear yes.
Yeah, very true.
And what I will say is that I think my family in particular may have instilled in me a sense of stick-to-itiveness in spite of any of the obstacles that might fall in your path, that you got to keep work. You got to keep going. I think like even when I think about my childhood, just that being instilled in me, there's certain, and it's a double-edged sword because there's certain things that you're like, that you, I'm going to hold this because I got to keep going.
Right.
But
I mean, you have so much background and experience, and then it also feels, and you got to correct me if I'm wrong, but, and it was like this way for me, eventually when you don't even hear the no's anymore. It's more like you just keep going forward. You feel like if you let a single no be super devastating to you and hold you back, you're not going to be able to get anywhere.
Facts.
Yes. As a professional actor like yourself, what advice would you give to possibly someone who's coming up for them to keep pushing forward past those no's? Because I'll be honest, just like any other creative, those first couple of no's, they hurt.
They hurt.
But then eventually you build
a thicker skin. Yeah, because it's okay. I'm going to answer that, but I'm also going to give you a little thing. The organization I was talking about, I would write for them, shows for them, and then I was asked to come back and basically take over the department. And I jumped at the chance because I happened to be in New York, and I was like, I'll do it. And it was great. And one of the things that I would say, and one of the things that would happen is that you drop a line or you forget your blocking or something happens, and I would watch kids completely fall apart and not know what to do. And I'm like, okay, it's not about, I'm not preparing you for perfection. Mm-hmm. I'm preparing for you for projection. I'm preparing you to keep moving.
Not perfection, but projection.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's the situation where it's not about when you get the lines right. And I think we had a conversation about this, and it brings you back to something that Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face.
Yes.
Well, it's all about recovery. I think that's what people care about more.
Yes.
Because I remember when I was in theater school, I was in my second semester final performance in front of the whole school. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was there was a point, it was Neil Simon's Brighton Beach Memoirs. That was first semester. But the second one, I forget what it was. But anyway, I had dropped some papers during the scene and completely blanked in front of everybody. And now my classmates told me I had only blanked for 5 seconds, but I thought
it feels like
it was 2 hours because I'm sitting here just completely blanked. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if I'm going to get it back. Obviously, long story short, I finished the scene, right? And this is then the next semester going in is one acts to get cast in one acts. And I'm like, there's no chance anybody cast me for anything.
Because you thought that you messed up.
I just completely messed up so gigantically. And what ended up happening was that I got cast in all of the one acts. And I went to ask my friends in the upper years. I was like, I don't understand why you guys cast me because I just messed up so massively. And they were like, we didn't care that you messed up. The thing that we cared about was the fact that you did mess up, but you were able to recover because that's going to happen.
Exactly.
So we need to know.
Right.
We need to know that you can recover.
Yeah. And it's not only recover, but also deliver.
Yeah.
And we're human beings. We have our insecurities. We have all of those. And so all of that stuff, plus whatever our families contribute to
environment contributes to.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything contributes to it. So it's more so about, okay, so what do you do? What do you do if what you plan to happen does not happen? What are you going to do? Are you going to stop? And a lot of times, and that's what would happen. They would stop. And I was like, no, do not stop. You have to keep going.
The audience doesn't know.
They don't.
They don't even know.
I've had situations on stage where literally doing fight choreography and it was a knife fight. Mm-hmm. And there's a point where I don't know if it was me or if it was my best friend. We were playing opposite each other, which is always fun.
Yeah.
And we leaned in and then something happened and we actually hit heads. We bumped heads.
Oh, really?
And I'm not even like a tap. It was like, bam.
You headbutt each other.
And
like
we both fell out. And it was the last climax and like the finale of the show.
Right.
Was this big fight scene. And we both fall out. But, everyone in the cast was like, oh. And then, because they saw, they could see what happened. The audience doesn't know. But then it felt like you were saying, and it felt like it was like 10 minutes that we were out and it wasn't. It was like literally a couple of seconds. And then we got back up and then we went right back into it. And it was a great show. But it was just like, at the end, we were like, yo, you all right? Are you right? So I'm good. You good? Yes, I'm good. Okay.
It's not really about what happens to you. It's really about what you choose to do in those responsive times.
Yeah.
Gilbert, it's been so great to have you on the show, man.
Thank you.
In the first part and the second part. Anywhere we can follow you.
Oh, yes. You still use Facebook? It's under my name, Gilbert Glenn Brown. Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T, G-L-E-N-B-R-O-W-N. And also, same on Instagram, same on Twitter, same on my website.
All the handles are the same.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Dope. It's been so great to have you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
It's been a lot of fun.
I'm bummed this, we're done. But But thank you so much for
having
me.
There'll definitely be more great stuff soon. And we'll have you back on the show.
I would absolutely love to. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Guys, this is Film Center News. My name's Derek Johnson II.
I'm Nicholas Killian.
And we're here with the great
Gilbert Glenn Brown.
And we'll see you next time.
See you.
This has been Film Center on Comic-Con Radio. Check out our previous episodes at ComicConRadio.com. You can follow the show at Film Center News on all major social media platforms. Tune in next Wednesday for a fresh update. Until next time, this has been Film Center.